Hello.
Music. That
Hello.
Music was
welcome.
Good.
Back. I love that countdown music. I know.
It does it shift tempo?
Ooh, does it?
It started. It was like fast, and I was grooving, and then it went
Oh yeah.
Boom, boom, boom.
I don't know if that's on purpose or not, but it might just be like the stream catching up. But anyways,
oh, maybe.
Welcome to the show, everybody. My name's Brandon Minnick. I'm your host this week with a very special guest host, PJ Metz. He's back. He's been our guest a couple times now. Our co-host, Chloe Condon, is taking a much-deserved vacation, and PJ graciously offered to fill in. So, PJ, welcome back to the show.
Listen, it's nice to be on the other side of the desk here, as we say in the teaching world. It's kind of neat. Like, I feel like I've been given an unhealthy amount of power, and I actually have no power at all. So this is perfect for my narcissistic personality.
Love it. And for anybody who didn't catch the episodes where you came on as a guest, tell the folks, who are you and what do you do?
So my name is PJ Metz. I'm a current high school teacher living in Florida, and I am on my journey learning how to code and hoping to become a developer some point soon, eventually, perhaps, maybe in the future. But I've been coding since May because Brandon, which I have to point this way, Brandon here brought up that he thought that it's something that I was capable of. And I was like, you're a liar. I'm not able to code. I don't have the math brain. And then I found out it's not quite math brain stuff. And then I found out I am capable of doing it. So I've been learning to code in C#. I've been making websites in ASP.NET Core. And I am doing this all while teaching AP Lang and English 4 standard English classes at a high school nearby.
Easy.
Easy. Whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. So the websites I've made, Brandon, when he first was teaching me, he was like, well, you got to have some kind of project, something you're working on. And I came up with your new favorite poem.net, which is available at metzandaround.com. Because I managed, this happened, what, like 4 weeks ago? I was like, I branded myself. My Instagram, my Twitter, my GitHub, my Twitch, all of them have the same name on them. And I managed to find a .com for it, too. So metzandaround.com has all the stuff I've made. I made the your new favorite poem.net, which is a... YNFP.net. The full address is your new favorite poem.azurewebsites.com. But yeah, it's all about modern poetry. It's all about poets you probably didn't learn about in your English class. And it's all about poets who deserve to be read. And it's been a journey that, Brandon, you've been on with me, building that website, making it functional, and spending 4 hours trying to make a database work on it.
Yeah, that's been the fun part because, like PJ mentioned, he's been an English teacher for, gosh, 10 years now, 10 plus years.
And, fat decade.
And yeah, we're just chatting as friends do over quarantine via Zoom back in May, and the school year is wrapping up, and I mentioned PJ, I was like, dude, you could totally do this. Like, you can learn to code. And so ever since then... he's ironically been using me as a teacher who knows nothing about web. I'm a mobile developer. I make iOS and Android apps. And PJ said he wanted to make a website. So I said, great, we'll figure it out together. And so, yeah, we've been live streaming on Twitch every Sunday. If you want to also join the struggle, check us out. 9 a.m. Pacific. What's that? Noon Eastern?
Noon Eastern. Yeah.
But anyways, how's your week been, PJ?
Oh, man. Our school is very proactive about being safe during all of this because, as you know, like, that has to be a top priority. There's a couple schools around the Central Florida area that have had to go completely virtual for 2 or 3 weeks. And our school actually works really hard to keep that from happening. They're very adamant about masks. They're adamant about keeping 6 feet apart whenever possible. And they've bought into the, there's the Swiss cheese method of prevention where you put as many layers of protection, even if there's some problems and gaps, if you've got several layers of protection, that tries to close all those gaps. So I actually feel safe at work, which is good. But even now there's still a positive case here, a positive case there. And they're doing everything they can to get kids in a learning environment that's safe. But this week especially has just felt kind of hard. But we're getting it done. We're getting it done, which is great. That's good. Yeah, and we're finishing up The Crucible, which is one of my favorite books. I love it. I love The Crucible. We just finished teaching it. They're taking their test tomorrow, and then we move on to... It's called Maggie, A Girl of the Streets, and it's by Stephen Crane, and it's about the saddest book you could ever read. My poor AP kids are not going to know what hit them. They're not going to. I always tell them, like, this is going to be a sad book, but sorry.
You'll thank me when you're older.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's awesome. And you know, obviously, thank you for all the extra work, extra stress you're doing during the pandemic. Teachers everywhere, thank you. Obviously, none of this could be done without you. Yeah. But speaking of school, specifically high school, we have an amazing guest today who I actually met back when I was in high school. And he's one of the, we played the drums together. We were on drumline, and he's one of the most amazing percussionists I've ever seen and gotten the opportunity to play with. And unfortunately, we fell out of touch after high school, but it turns out he's also gotten into DevRel, into developer relations, and we've since reconnected over on the Twitters, and was so excited to reach out to him today to invite him on the show. So let's bring him in, give a big round of applause to Sam Julien from Auth0.
Yes! Welcome, hey. Sam!
Yeah, super, super excited to be here. I can't believe that I happen to be here when Chloe's on vacation, but I'm also super excited to hang out with PJ, because the other cool thing about this is that it turns out all three of us went to the University of Florida around the same time, but we did not hang out together. We didn't even know each other. Well, we knew each other.
Literally all at college, yeah. All at the same time, and amazing. None of us knew it. But here we are.
We were all in very different worlds. I think Sam and my world might have overlapped maybe the most. Actually, not even. That's not true. I thought it would have, because you were into percussion and Brandon quit entirely when he got to college. But you said other than a few things, right? Like, we all did drumline in high school, but I'm the only guy who kept going. What is that?
It's
why?
True. True. Yeah, I didn't keep going with all that stuff. I just played, you know, on my own. Doing stuff. I went through a brief period where I was in a band in Portland, but it was short-lived once the bassist had twins. So,
bassist, I tell you, it's always the bassist that has twins.
Always the bassist. Right. No, it was
classic.
Fun.
Classic excuse. Yeah. But yeah, man, it's so good to hang out with you again. And I think what's really cool is, you know, there's definitely a common theme on the show where we talk about everybody's journey into tech, because it is all different. And we have two folks joining us today in both PJ and Sam. Sam's a little farther along than PJ, but PJ is chugging away at it. So awesome. But yeah, Sam, you also did not start out in tech. Tell the folks a little bit about your background.
Yeah. Yeah, I am also a self-taught developer. I learned a little bit of like HTML and CSS when I was in high school. But then when I went to UF, I started in computer science, and then I washed out really quickly because of the math. I too, just like PJ, I thought like, well, I mean, my schedule was basically like Calc 2 physics, you know, and I was like, I kind of just want to learn to code. I don't understand this. Right? And as I was signing up for differential equations for the next semester, I thought, maybe this isn't for me. Maybe I'm just not cut out for this. So I quit. I moved over to, I ended up doing a bunch of philosophy, history, religion, sociology, stuff like that. Ended up getting a degree in religion. Thought I was going to go into academia. And then I actually ended up going into finance for like 5 years. And then at the brokerage that I was working at, we had we were kind of special in that we wrote our own trading platform. And so I had become friends with the developers there, and I was starting to get really disillusioned and burnt out by the world of finance. I kind of got into it because I thought I could, you know, help the average person and, you know, make a difference. You know, all the same things that all young 20-somethings think about changing the world and all that stuff. And so luckily these developers that I was working with, they became friends with me and they started helping me learn to code. And I too started with .NET and C# and BigQuery. It was K. Scott Allen, who rest in peace, he's the first person who whose courses I watched to learn .NET and C#. And so through a variety of people helping me, I ended up getting into development. I moved to Portland, had my first development job, and sort of the rest is history. I ended up getting into developer relations and stuff like that. Started working for Auth0 a couple of years ago. So I'm really passionate. I had a lot of people help me along the way, and I'm really passionate about helping other people get into coding because it's such a huge life-changing. I mean, it really changes the trajectory of your life and your family. And so I sometimes call myself a professional gate opener because I like to help people who you know also think that they have to have a degree in computer science or something like that. I see
that's
James
way better than being a gatekeeper. Really
just wanted to say hi to James, my teammate. He's dropped by James. The Twitch channel and
yes,
yeah.
Hey.
That's fantastic.
But yeah, that's sort of the Reader's Digest version of my story and why I do what I do, and I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, and that's what I think is I love hearing these stories because there's definitely still that stigma around that yes, you have to get a degree. But Sam, like you were saying, I mean, I did a computer engineering degree in college, but you know, why so much emphasis on math? I mean, I enjoy math and science, but yeah, how often do I use differential equations in my day-to-day life as a programmer? Probably zero.
All right, good. Like, I was actually really waiting to hear the answer. Yeah, like, I need to learn? Different? Is it like once? Because I won't know what to do.
I was trying to at least think of like, has there been one situation where I've had to use differential equations? And like, I can't think of any. And so, yeah, I took a class on it. And I had to pass that class to get this degree. But is it really necessary these days? Do we really need to keep hammering this home? No, definitely not.
Yeah.
Need more poetry classes.
That's more right. Poetry.
Yeah. Actually, and that's one thing that I've really been loving is getting to know people from all over, you know, totally different backgrounds. You know, I know people who were biologists before or who were geniuses at the Apple store or who were, you know, all over the place. And it's amazing how you can pretty much anyone who wants to learn to code can learn to code and often dramatically impact their like financial picture, you know.
Not only that, there seems to be a lot of programs out there that are aimed at getting people who are from not just non-traditional backgrounds as far as work or as far as careers or as far as college, but just underrepresented people that want that opportunity too. I'm seeing tons of opportunities for women, for LGBT people, for people of color, for Black people. This is just such a great time. I think there seems to be more and more opportunities. And as more of those people get in, they're going to do what Sam did and go and open the gates and get more and more qualified, great, hardworking people in.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I love all that stuff. I know there's a lot of work to do, but it is a good time. We're definitely starting to see some cracks in the armor and get more and more people in. So
yeah. Tear down those gates. And actually, speaking of which, not only does Sam talk about it, but he puts his money where his mouth is, so to speak. Sam, you have a book. We'll put it in the ticker down below, Getting Started in DevRel.
Yes.
Tell us more about it. Like, first, what inspired you to do a book? Because that terrifies me. So thank you and congratulations. But,
There were a number of different factors. This topic, so the book is about sort of what is developer relations, what is a developer advocate, you know, are we just glorified sticker dispensers? Like, how does that work? And so I have people ask me all the time, like, how do I get into DevRel or how do I become a developer advocate? So I had started writing some of these things down. I've always been a writer, and I was sort of kind of had this in the back of my mind. And then two things happened simultaneously that really helped out. One was that I run this program at Auth0 called Auth0 Ambassadors, and it's a really great program for people to get into writing and speaking and making content around identity and security and things like that. So I've been developing a training curriculum for them. And then at the same time, I have a friend who is a dev advocate for Facebook named Joe Praveet. And he started doing these two-week product challenges where he would have people join these little cohorts and write an ebook or create like a digital product of some kind and do it from start to finish in 2 weeks. So all of these things sort of converged around September. And so it gave me this impetus and accountability to actually put this out there and turn it into a book. And so so it's 70 page ebooks, it's $9. And it's just to help people kind of dip their toes into the water of DevRel and learn what it is. And I actually give a strategy for how you can start doing DevRel stuff if you want to, and measuring your impact and all that. So that if you want to get into that field or just level up your career, you can be prepared for interviews because you can actually show a body of work and how that body of work has impacted other people and improved the community. So that's the long and short of it.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I think one of the most common questions I get, because you kind of forget that the rest of the world, especially outside of our tech bubble, doesn't know what DevRel means or developer right. relations are. And so
a lot of people in the tech world don't know what it is.
That's true too. But yeah, I'd say that's probably the hardest question I get is when somebody's like, well, so what do you do for work? I kind of result to just saying I'm an iOS and Android app developer because that's true. Albeit, right. yes, I work in developer relations and my goal is building and contributing to the greater community. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've had so many times like, I'll just say, oh yeah, I work at DevRel. And someone's just like, what?
Is that across from the Target, the DevRel? Yeah, I've seen that store.
Yeah. But yeah, it's so good to see you have we have materials on it. We can recommend these to folks. You know, and PJ is somebody that's new and getting into it.
That book, I'm buying that book like, today. I was grading a lot yesterday, but we talked Monday, and I was like, oh yeah, and I made a note. Go buy this book. It's $9. Like, I'm not gonna not buy that book. I need this book. I'm trying to get a job here, people.
Definitely. And Sam, I'd love to dive a little deeper into that that insights in the analytics part, because I've been doing this job, been working in DevRel for a few years now, and that's always the hardest part for me, because yes, I can give a talk at a conference. Yes, I can publish a video to YouTube or host a workshop, but I never really know what exactly that impact has been. Like, did somebody in that workshop go off to push an app to the iOS and Android app stores? Did somebody go off and just like create the best website in the world? Well, probably not for me because I don't. It's now I'm a web developer, thanks to PJ. But yeah, what are your recommendations around managing those that analytics and that feedback loop?
Yeah, so there's a woman named Mary Thangvall who wrote a book called The Business Value of Developer Relations. And she has a quote in that book: one of the most difficult things to do in DevRel is prove that the investment is worthwhile. And that's really true. And so the thing with measuring, we like to call this measuring impact in developer relations. And you have to do that along several different dimensions. And you have to do that both quantitatively and qualitatively. So on the one hand, you have to look at things like number of views or number of attendees at a conference or whatever, but that doesn't always tell the whole story, right? Because like you said, you could give a talk to 500 people and you're just background noise, or you could give a talk to 30 people and one of them becomes the next, you know, Saran who made Code Newbie, you know? So like, you never know who you're talking to and what kind of impact you're having. So you also need to measure qualitative things like sentiment in the community and like goodwill that you're building in the community, or you know, problems that you're solving for people and noticing trends and things like that. And so there's entire strategies that you can build around both the quantitative and the qualitative side of DevRel.
Oh, I love it. And yeah, that's the challenge, right? It's yeah, how do you build your tools and feedback? And yeah, because at the end of the day, somebody has to sign your paycheck. And if right. that, if I can't prove to Satya Nadella at Microsoft that what I'm doing is making an impact, then he's probably going to not sign my paychecks anymore.
That's right.
Right.
That's always been right. the biggest challenge and concern, really, for me. Like, I love this job. And I see the one-on-one conversations I have, and I know that we are making an impact. But yeah, how do you quantitize that into a way that, you know, maybe a CEO only cares about dollars and cents and growth, and they
right.
they don't want to use views on YouTube as a metric. But I think it's right. I think more companies are starting to figure it out that DevRel is an important thing, that we have to grow our developer communities. We have to have learning materials and documentation, and all of that has to be really good, because otherwise people won't use the tools. Mm-hmm. You know, right. how many times have we all been there where you go, like, you hear about this library and you're like, oh, cool, I'll pop it in my app, I'll try it out. And there's no documentation, or the documentation that's there just is years old and it doesn't work. And you find yourself on Stack Overflow trying to figure out the answers, or maybe it's open source, you can dive into the source code. But yeah, it's starting to become a thing in the industry where it's like, step one is like, we can't push a product without all this stuff. We need to have right. these tutorials. We need to have this documentation.
Yeah.
And actually, PJ, I'm curious how your experience has been, because somebody who is brand new.
Yeah.
What do you trust?
Luckily for me, I either have you or Chloe helping me. You've been helping me build your new favorite poem website, and Chloe has been helping me build Shania Bot, which is a Twitter bot that once a day tweets "Let's go, girls" as a motivator for all the people who need it.
Speaking of which,
yep, that's the that's the article Chloe's putting together about building a bot. And with the two of you, I always feel like I can get my question answered pretty quickly, but I also sometimes feel like I'm being dragged along, and I'm like looking at things as we're passing by. You're like, those are just APIs. Don't worry about it right now. We'll get back to that. That's just async. We don't need to worry. You'll find out later. And I'm like, okay.
I did say that.
Yeah.
But, don't worry about async and wait.
Yeah. But there's also this sense of there's all this world, and I think Sam said it earlier, like sometimes even in tech, there's not a realization that the way your tech world works is not necessarily the way everyone outside of it works. So if it is about opening it up and trying to get more and more qualified people in and giving them ease of access and tools that are just going to make them better employees, developers, help them to create something, then making sure that you've got someone who can explain the tools and who can help people use the tools and just give them a spark of an idea, that's all that person needs sometimes. I've seen this in teaching where we use a lot of tech in teaching now. We've got learning management systems, and we've got Nearpod and Pear Deck and all these different things that help us bring things to students. And just giving a teacher an idea, well, this is how you could use it, that teacher's then going to run with it and take it in a new direction and find something interesting to do. I just used a great app called Parlay, and I know no one out there is like, oh, I'm going to go use Parlay, but it's called Parlay. It's for online discussions, and I was trying to think how I could use it in my class because I have half virtual, half in person, and I used this online discussion tool to make everyone sort of be in the same room virtually, essentially, and they are able to have this back and forth discussion, and it gives me tools to measure engagement on the students, and it's something that they had to like show me, work with me on, and then I was able to use it on my own. But if there's not someone showing people how to use a library, how to use Xamarin Forms, like you're always talking about Xamarin Forms, Brandon, and if there's not someone out there pushing it, no one's going to use it because they don't know what it can do for them.
Very well said.
True. Yeah. Very well said.
Hire me!
We need to clip that and get it in front of every CEO that doesn't believe in DevRel.
Come on, y'all.
Yeah, one of the things that I love the most about DevRel is that your job is to work with all of these different teams at all of these different levels. You know, like I was just I'm planning to give a presentation to our sales team, because even though DevRel is not sales, I can help them understand like the developer mindset and what's going on with that. But then at the same time, I can work with our SDK team on improving a feature, or work with our docs team on clarifying something that, you know, people are having trouble with. And that's kind of the beauty of being a developer advocate, is you literally advocate for the developer across all levels of the company.
Yeah. And my favorite part that you just touched on is there's no sales. A lot of folks think like, oh, like, what are you trying to sell me? I'm like, I'm not trying to sell you anything. Like, I don't have a commission. I just want to share my passions with you. And if you're excited about something, I'm excited about something. And that's what I'm here for. But
right.
With that, there's also, like, at least at Microsoft, we're not tied to sales. We're not tied to marketing. And so I can be honest. And there's been times where people ask me about something and I say, hey, I wouldn't use that. Like, I know that's the Microsoft tool and Microsoft wants you to pay them money for it. But like, that one hasn't been updated in a couple of years. I don't recommend it. And here's another one. And actually, speaking of amazing tools, Sam, you're currently working at Auth0, which I've had a chance to play around with it, and it is a great tool. But I'm kind of curious, because we've had this conversation around learning things and teaching things. I have a hunch that PJ's maybe never heard of Auth0. And could we try getting to yes, yes, yes on all of us understanding what is Auth0? I guess first, PJ, are you down for this?
I have not. Look, we've been talking about it since Monday, and I was like, oh, yeah, I love Auth0. They're one of my favorite punk bands from the late 90s. But I get a feeling you're not actually doing DevRel for Auth0. So I'd love to know about this.
Although being a dev advocate for a punk rock band sounds pretty fun, I'm not going to lie.
I mean, yeah, that'd be great. I would probably do Bad Religion instead of Auth0, but they're both awesome.
So PJ, have you had to add login to an app yet? Have you gotten to that stage of anything yet?
No, but it is something that has been brought up as a possibility for the Poem website, having people like log in and then create an account. And then this is like a million years in the future. Like, yeah, what are your poems that you like?
Right.
Ooh, the MySpace of poetry. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So that whole kind of system of like having somebody be able to create a profile, log in, have different maybe roles. Maybe some people can only use certain poems, or, you know, maybe there's an admin role or something. That's the kind of thing that Auth0 works, does basically. So it's basically a kind of a set of libraries and tools to make that process easier, instead of you having to write every piece of that from scratch. You basically just made me drop in,
shiver, thinking about having to build that.
Instead of having to build that whole thing, you just kind of like drop it in, configure it, and then and kind of tweak it, and then it does all of the gnarly auth stuff behind the scenes, basically.
Okay, so that you do. Does it give you like your own unique account, or is it like? Like when I go to a new website and it's like, do you want to use Facebook or Google or this to log in? Or is it like unique accounts only to that particular website? That like, let's say I dropped your library in for my poetry website. Would it be a unique account, or would it be like is that called third party authentication?
Yeah. So you can actually do either one. You could create, you could use kind of like username and password kind of thing. Or you could have somebody sign in with something like Facebook or Twitter or Twitch or whatever other social provider you want.
Okay. All right.
And just kind of connect it to that. Yeah.
Well, I have no idea what the benefits of one or the other. I know I tend to use Google. I used to use Facebook a lot. And then it imported all of like my Facebook profile info to the new profile. It was like to get a free PowerPoint slide that I was using for my classroom. And one of the things that was on there was like a stupid joke in the bio. You remember when there was like an about section on Facebook?
Yeah.
And it was only a single set. I had a silly joke there, a little silly joke, and it imported that for some reason. And then I got called to the principal's office and they're like, so some kid found something online and you need to get rid of it. I was like, where? Because I had totally forgotten I used this website at all. It didn't even exist in my mind. So I sent my friends on Facebook. I was like, you guys need to help me find this website. And someone did. And I got on and deleted my profile. I was like, oh my God. Oh, it was terrifying.
Yeah, that's so funny. I've noticed that, like, because I think it was like around the time that we were in college that they had the like about section and everything. And there are a lot of friends that if I go on their profile, they have the same about me section from like 2006. And it's really funny because it's like completely, you know, they're like doctors and lawyers now or something. And they come with like against me quotes and like, yeah. like go Gators and stuff like that. And you're like,
oh, yeah. It's oh really man! Funny. It's like 06 champs.
Yeah, still there. Like, I don't know if I want 2006 Sam on the internet these days.
Yeah. Oh, nope. I just had a flood of memories hit me, and I think I need a lie down pretty soon.
Well, yeah, that's one of the things. Like, I'm sure you guys too, but. I was one of the first users on Facebook, like back when it was still the Facebook, back when you had to have a college college email address just to create an account.
The wall was only a single block of text.
Yeah. And it's so different now. But as it's changed, you've changed the way you treated it. And I mean, to be frank, I don't really use it much for anything nowadays. Like there's a couple Xamarin Facebook groups that I hang out in, but I don't really post anything or anything like that, but I used to all the time back then because, like, all my friends at the college, we could share all this stuff. And thinking about, like you said, PJ, having something from 2006 appear and, like, show up into work.
Oh, man.
No, thank you.
Yeah, that's not good stuff. Not good stuff. Remember when you would get home from a party and your friend would, like, send you a text that was like, hurry up and upload the pictures from the party. Because we couldn't do it. You couldn't upload from your phone. You had to like plug in your camera, upload them.
That's right.
Give them fun titles, add comments, tag. It was a whole ordeal. Ugh, yeah, what difficult time.
Right? Like back before we knew that, we were just tagging friends in photos. But now we know that, well, we were actually training Facebook's facial recognition AI for free for them. So. You're welcome, Facebook. You got me. Yeah, but
thanks.
not next time.
Some updated. Yeah, no, I'm not doing the 10-year challenge.
Oh man. So PJ, how are you feeling about Auth0?
So it makes sense. I never thought about what that process might look like when you're building a website. So it makes total sense that there's a library that exists in a series of libraries, like you said, that you can just drop in that creates it. And God, yeah, it's, I start thinking about like having to try and do that on my own and I get really sweaty and gross, but yeah, that makes sense to me that that's a product that you guys provide. I like that.
Yeah. And I will say, the biggest feedback I can give to anybody looking into getting into just authorization, authentication, don't try to create your own library. Like if you are actually an expert, like you're a security expert, you know all the things, okay. But for somebody like me, you're just asking for security vulnerabilities and loopholes and backdoors. And that's why I really appreciate companies like Auth0, because they have the experts. So you can rely on them to establish these safe, secure authorization, authentication connections, and you can kind of sleep easier at night knowing that you didn't forget to code something.
It's like I purchased a home security system. I didn't build a complicated series of levers and like other things so that when the door opens, like a gong hits and I'm like, someone's here. Like I purchased that. Someone else will take care of that for me. I trust them.
Absolutely.
I see so, we had a question in the chat. Surly Dev asked, is Auth0 competing or complementary to multi-factor technologies such as Microsoft, Google? So it's complementary. You can use it with that. And actually, Twilio Authy is based on Auth0. We're like mutual customers of each other. So use other multi-factor things. But yeah, so the rolling your own auth, I think for like a small side project thing, you can do it as an educational exercise, but then beyond that, you get into trouble really quickly. You start talking about like secure passwords and multi-factor and brute force attacks and all that, and it's just too much.
It's terrifying. Yeah, like I was there a couple of years ago because somebody gave me that same advice, and I was like, I'm smart enough, I can figure this out. And then, yeah, sure, you can get like a login page working and little things like you want to hash the password and salt it before you put in the database so that if the database gets hacked, nobody has clear text passwords. But then like, yeah, like you're just saying, Sam, with like, how do you reset a password? What if somebody forgets their password? How do you authenticate them? Like, how do you send those emails back to them that says like, you're the new user. How do you implement two-factor auth? And like, it becomes really hard really quickly, even ignoring all of the security patches and flaws that I probably had in my system. So don't try to reinvent the wheel. Yeah. Use amazing tools like Auth0.
This makes me really appreciate the the fact that I had to recently reset my Moe's app password so I could order some Moe's Monday. It was a process, but I appreciate it now. I thinking about everything that has to go into that, I appreciate having to go through all those hoops. I don't want people ordering those without my consent.
That's right. Especially if your credit card's in there.
Yo, that's my free queso. Also, yeah, my credit card is in fact attached to that, so that's important too, I guess.
I miss Moe's. I don't have Moe's over here.
They don't have I'm not moving to the Pacific Northwest now if there's not a Moe's.
On the bright side, though, there is still a lot of amazing food out here. So
as long as if there's an In-N-Out, I'll be happy.
There are In-N-Outs in Southern Oregon. So you have to go to Medford. There's one in Medford. There's one in Salem, actually. I don't know if there's one in Bend.
Okay, Salem. Salem's south of Portland. Is that?
Yeah, it's an hour south of Portland, so you'll be fine.
I can get there. I can do it. I mean, yeah, I wasn't thinking of moving to Portland. Salem's on the short list. Salem.
Oh.
Was it Beaverton?
Salem. Bend. My in-laws are in Salem, and it's a great place. It's a great place. Pyrox says In-N-Out is way overrated, and you know what?
Don't listen to him.
I have a theory. Me and Amy, we have a theory, okay? We call it the Chick-fil-A In-N-Out nostalgia theory. So here's our theory. If you grew up eating Chick-fil-A or In-N-Out, you think they are much better than they actually are because you have nostalgia. So if you've eaten them as an adult for the first time, then you don't think they're... So Amy grew up in Oregon, had never had Chick-fil-A until I came along into her life. And she finds it very meh. And
what?
Yeah, and
I'd take offense
I
to that.
Did not grow up eating In-N-Out. And even though I think In-N-Out for a cheap burger is a good burger, like I don't think it's the greatest burger I've ever had.
Well, I'm not saying it's the greatest, but it's the first thing I do when I get to California. Like my friend's a vegetarian and I land and he picks me up in LAX and I'm like, good to see you. I'm so glad I'm here. Take me to an In-N-Out right now.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you have to.
I mean, anytime I'm in California, I definitely hit an In-N-Out or like Vegas or whatever. Like I like it. I just, you know, I don't think it's like the best thing ever.
No, there's better burgers, of course. Yeah. And I'm not going to argue with Pyrock. Five Guys, if you do a side by side, yeah, I'm going to enjoy a Five Guys burger better. But when I'm in California, I'm going to get a double double and some animal style fries. Well done. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Yeah.
Oh, we even have some Ronnie in the comments is saying Chick-fil-A on the West Coast isn't as good as Chick-fil-A in the South. I think they're from Atlanta originally. So maybe the farther away you get from the hub. But
I believe
I don't know.
I didn't even know Chick-fil-A was on the West Coast. I didn't know they had any locations over there.
Only recently.
Yeah, there's a legend. There's a legend of a Gainesville In-N-Out, actually.
People
swear to God that there was an In-N-Out in Gainesville, Florida, and there's a rumor that it was maybe the official In-N-Out that had like a random franchisee, or that it was like named In-N-Out, but it wasn't the same. But talk to kids who grew up in Gainesville, and they'll swear there was an In-N-Out there.
Well, it can't be, because the owners of
this In-N-Out. Is what I say. It doesn't stop these Gainesville kids from saying, no, there wasn't In-N-Out there.
Yeah, because they've refused to expand their distribution past 24 hours of trucking so that they can still have fresh ingredients. And so, I don't know, man. That one doesn't pass a smell test.
I can't convince my friends who grew up in Gainesville.
Small town Florida. Now, maybe there was a restaurant called In-N-Out.
It was called In-N-Out Burger. And there's a menuism.com page about In-N-Out Burger in Gainesville.
Oh, man. The plot thickens.
I'm telling you. And they were like, yeah, it's just like In-N-Out. And I was like, it can't be. But I I'm not saying one way or the other. People are saying, and most of those people are from Gainesville and grew up there.
Well, speaking of DevRel.
Yeah. I'm really good at derailing. I'll be a great DevRel.
We got to have a whole nother episode just devoted to food-based preferences and conspiracy theories, because I'm all in. So share them with us in the comments. Let us know what you got, and we'll queue up a whole episode out. It'll be great.
Definitely need Chloe for that one, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sure. So Sam, I know you mentioned you got started with .NET, C#, when you're teaching yourself to code, which, great, those are my favorites. But I know you have a website now called Upgrading AngularJS. So does that mean you are a full-fledged JavaScript developer now? And tell us more about how the website came about.
Yeah, my first jobs were in C# with just sort of like, you know, MVC and jQuery and stuff. And then that was like right around 2014, which is when a bunch of JavaScript frameworks started coming out, 2013, 2014. And so I started learning AngularJS. It was just called Angular back then. And that's the version 1.x. And was able to convince my company to let me write a feature in AngularJS. And that kind of started me down the JavaScript path, and I've gotten real deep into JavaScript on both the back end and the front end. But I've done a lot of work in the Angular community, and what sort of led me to DevRel was there was this period of time where Angular went from version 1 to version 2+, and it was a huge breaking change. It wasn't like just an upgrade. And so it was a big problem. Lots of companies needed to figure out how to migrate from version 1, which is called AngularJS, to version 2+, which is Angular, just called Angular. And so I made this big, huge course. Like I was in the middle of doing a migration myself, and there were no good resources out there really at the time. There were a little bit of documentation, but no kind of like comprehensive tutorials or anything. So I made the course that I wish existed, and it's like 230 videos and step-by-step walks through the process of going from AngularJS to Angular. And so I launched that. I spent pretty much all of 2017 building that, and then launched it in 2018 with a couple of friends. And so then that kind of like launched me into DevRel stuff, because I started writing articles to promote it. I started giving talks about the migration process and the libraries that you have to use and the steps and everything. And that's still going. I teach on other platforms now. I give talks on a lot of different topics, but the upgrade stuff, believe it or not, is still viable. It's still a thing that people struggle with. A lot of like big enterprise companies are still doing this process of migrating from old Angular to new Angular. And so that's kind of what got me down that road.
That's incredible.
Sounds like this is what they need.
It's one of those things, like, I don't toot my own horn very often, but I will say, like, this is probably the best resource out there. They're very, at this point, I'm an industry expert on this problem. Like, I actually know a lot about it, and there's, like, a handful of other people who know as much as I do, but not many. And so, like, I put a lot of time and effort into that course. And, there's a few things that in it that you know, as it's gotten older, have been either updated or whatever, but the core concepts have not really changed. So, but yeah, I mean, it's crazy because it's like something that's been a problem for a couple of years. And I literally, like, I did a consulting job on it, like, a month ago, like, so it's been like three years or whatever. We're still dealing with this problem. So it's, so it was a big problem in for that community. So
that's such a fantastic, like, you saw a void in what people needed. You were like, well, like, if I have to do this anyway, I'm going to document it, and so other people can follow me. And that's really forward thinking. And it's something that I think is something I'm trying to work on in teaching, is when I come up with an idea and when I do something, I'm almost afraid to, like, share what I've done, because I don't want people to be like, well, yeah, obviously that's what we would do, and I don't want to say something that's already been said. But when you notice that vacancy, and you know people will need it because you could have used it, it's awesome that you set out to fill in that void and to basically offer a hand to everyone who is going to have to go through what you were going through. It's brilliant. I think that's such a great way to operate.
Well, it's funny you say that, because as confident as I am right now, I was really terrified to release it. It was my first video course. I didn't have, like, very fancy equipment. You can clearly now I do this for a living, so I have this fancy stuff. But back then I had, like, not super expensive computer. I had maybe a $60 microphone. And I had no idea how people were going to respond. And so I was terrified, because I was like, what if I just spend all this time and I release this and people are like, this is stupid. Like, who is this guy? Like, what? This is so obvious. Like, nobody needs this. So I'm glad I kind of took a risk, and I had other people that were helping me, like, keep me accountable and things like that. And that helped a lot. And it sort of points to a lesson, because, you know, as we're talking about DevRel, one of the things that I always tell people is, like, you know, a lot of people think, you know, they want to do writing and speaking and things, and they see that they want to make that their full-time job. And I always say, like, you might not need to, like, you might be doing something at work that, like, to you seems boring, or, like, you're so like zoned into that thing that it's normal to you. It's average. Like, it doesn't seem extraordinary at all. But if you were to turn the things that you're already doing at work into resources that can help other people, then you might, like, be able to turn that into a new position or a new career or whatever by just, like, helping people do the things that you're already doing at work. And that's sort of what I did. I mean, like, I was just that course didn't come out of me, like, wanting to, you know, get into DevRel. It came out of the, like, blood, sweat, and tears of, like, doing this really painful migration process. And so, yeah, Ronnie in the chat says, that's been my hang up. Why, you know, so simple. Why would anybody care or need this? But yeah, I would definitely say, like, if something just because something feels obvious to you doesn't mean it's not going to help other people. A lot of the best teaching resources out there are just, like, straightforward tutorials. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've Googled, like, rebasing on Git, you know, like, it's just like little things like that, where, you know, just write down things that you're learning and get them out there in the world, and you never know who you're going to be able to help with it.
You just said that on your Twitter, like, even as you're learning things and as you're encountering new things, just write it down, make a quick blog post. It doesn't need to be fancy. It doesn't need to be super shiny. Just write it down, say what you figured out, and put it out there because it could help somebody. And like you also said on your Twitter, it also flexes that publishing muscle. Like, you are out there, you are making things happen, and you're building a skill for yourself too.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You can always come back and update, revise, like, beef it up, whatever. You know, if you start noticing that a lot of people are asking about it or talking about it or something, you can always make it better. I'm in the process of doing that right now with a lot of my old posts, like going through and updating them and things like that, making them better for, you know, better for SEO and all that. But just getting something out there in the world, it helps you learn to express yourself. It can help other people. It's a good practice to get into.
Yeah, and it's funny you guys say this, because I went through the same thing just a couple years ago when I was just getting into blogging and dipping my toe into this DevRel world, and I was so worried about having the perfect blog post. My first blog post I ever published to my blog was all about testing your mobile apps, and specifically using Xamarin UI Test. But I planned out in my head, I'm like, okay, this needs to be a 3-part series. Each part needs to build on top of the previous one. And it's all going to just be this amazing, beautiful masterpiece. And what I know now is I became so obsessed with getting it perfect that, you know,
oh, yeah.
I mean, no typos, everything needs screenshots, everything needs to be up to date, everything needs to make sense. I need to get a million people to proofread this. And then on top of that, setting this like 3 blog post series as a constraint, I even though I had the first blog post done, and it was even, and once it got to that point where like I had it perfect, like I didn't even want to publish it because I didn't have the third one done yet. And right. When I look back on that, I made these this false set of constraints, and I kind of boxed myself in. Whereas if I had just published the first one, people are going to read it. People are going to give you feedback, and then you can use that feedback for your next blog post, or you can iterate on the current blog post. And just getting something out there that's helpful is going to help people. You know, maybe, yeah, so what, you spelled a word wrong, doesn't matter. Or like if somebody leaves a comment that says, hey, you said to do this, but I can't find the button. Oh, then you can go add a screenshot. Like, it doesn't have to be perfect. And that's kind of the approach I'm taking now, is let's just create content that'll help people. And we can always iterate on it later. We don't have to worry about finding the perfect platform. Like, do we announce it on Twitter or Facebook or Dev2 or like all that stuff? We'll figure that out. But get your content out there and help the world, because that's how we all become better together.
Perfect is the enemy of good, y'all.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. That's really true. I've been really finding that instead of trying to, I definitely used to be like a really big perfectionist on that too. And it definitely prevented me from taking my own advice a few years ago. You know, like I would wait and edit and edit and edit. And the truth is that like you need other people's feedback to make your content better, to make Absolutely. Your writing better. So you need to be able to, I mean, PJ, an English teacher, like you got to like send, you know, like get that out there and publish the smallest iterable thing that you can do. Publish it when you feel like it's like 80% of the way there. Like you're a little embarrassed about it. It's not horrible, but you're a little embarrassed about it. And so you put it out into the world, and then you can, you know, there's something about actually publishing it that is the, like the switch that has to happen in your brain for some reason. Like it's a different experience than just working on it continuously. I don't know why that is, but like something about like seeing it live up in the world, like makes you look at your writing differently. And so then you, after you publish it, I mean, nobody knows what the first version is like. You could like 5 minutes later update it. It doesn't have to be, but like just get it out there, you know?
Yeah. It's very important to just constantly flex that muscle. I mean, since I know it was high school, but we all did marching band in high school. Can you imagine not doing the show until it was perfect? That first football game, the first time you march it. Sometimes it's only like 2 of the 4 songs or 3 of the songs. And sometimes you stand still for half the show because you haven't learned it when you're putting it out there. Yeah, especially as a percussionist, you're standing there. You're always adding to it. You're always making it better. And that's an important lesson. People are worried about putting stuff out there. Do it. Do it. And make the mistake and make it really big, and you will figure it out afterwards, and you'll be better next time.
Yeah. And shout out, Jacob says, marching band's a perfect analogy.
Always a good analogy. All the band nerds out there, I got your back on analogies, man. Just come see me.
So we've only got a couple minutes left, and I wanted to make sure, well, we had the opportunity to ask both of you today, or had you here to ask you this, because you both come from such different backgrounds from the typical tech employee, engineer, computer science, what's the biggest thing, or we'll say one thing, the biggest thing you've noticed in the tech world that we'll say is strange to you? Like, I don't understand why everybody does X. And Sam, let's go to you first.
So the strangest thing about tech coming from a non-traditional background, basically.
Right.
To me, to go back to my earlier thing, like, I'm always really confused by gatekeeping around like languages or tools or like what you look like or what your hobbies are. Like, to me, I've always found that very illogical. Like, who cares whether you like look a certain way or whether you use a certain language? Like, I've just never understood that. I just feel like the world is a big place and everybody has a part and you can do whatever you want. Like, so that part has always been weird. I'm glad that we're as an industry moving away from that and getting more like welcoming and inclusive and things like that. Cause I've just always found that really strange.
Well said. PJ.
I feel like my answer is dumb, but I'm going to say it anyway. Sort of the office culture around a lot of like tech companies totally blows me away. And the way that like there's so much available. Like, I had a friend who was working in tech, and I visited him over Christmas break one year, and he's like, hey, I can pick you up from the airport, but I gotta take you back to like my office, and you're gonna have to hang out at my office for a bit. I was like, oh, okay, cool. And it was the biggest kitchen I've ever seen, and there was every kind of soda or food imaginable. And he was like, yeah, you can help yourself. And I was like, all right. And I had like a bowl of Cap'n Crunch and a bagel. And like, I had all this food. I was like, what is going on? This is like the most food I've ever seen in my life. And he was like, oh man, you wouldn't believe people complain that they don't have the right soda for them. And I'm like, there's every soda I've ever known over there. And just that fact that that's all super available and it's like a norm. Like, I hope all y'all are being super nice to your office managers, because they deserve a lot of praise, because that seems like a lot of stuff to have in an office. I always imagined offices as, I mean, I'm a high school teacher. I was lucky if I got like a high five and a thank you sometimes. So seeing the stuff that's available out there is just fantastic. It also makes me really excited to not work remote eventually as a junior dev. I'm looking forward to getting my Mountain Dew on.
Oh, it's funny you mention that, because that's a weird one to me too, because I worked as an engineer, but in the small town of Melbourne, Florida, where I met PJ at a company called Harris, and there was none of that. So like, this is kind of new to me as part of like this, we'll say the big tech. So like the Googles, the Facebooks, the Microsofts, even the startup cultures. And I'm thankful that I experienced, I guess, what we call the real world before coming in, because I am so thankful for that. I mean, obviously, I haven't been to the office in months. But knowing that there was always something to drink, something to eat, knowing that I didn't have to go hungry if I needed to work through lunch, like, and I'm so thankful for it. And yeah, on the flip side, you see the folks that grew up in it, and they complain about the food's terrible or there's not their favorite drinks. But I digress. We are almost out of time. Sam, thanks so much for coming on the show today. Tell the people where they can find you.
Yeah, thanks. It's been awesome to be here. Yeah, so Twitter, I'm just at Sam G. Lean. Everything else I pretty much I put on my website. I write a lot. I just wrote like a guide to getting started with AWS for developers. I also write a weekly newsletter on like career tips, DevRel tips, things like that. So if you just go over to samjulien.com, that's a good way to keep in touch with me. And yeah, I hope we can brighten some people's day today and have an awesome week. And go write something.
Go write. Go publish it right now, y'all.
That's right. Could have said it any better myself. Well, PJ, Sam, thanks so much for joining this week. Amazing seeing you guys again, as always. And we'll see you again next week.